So as you can see from the map and from the title, today's a tour guide shir. If we could, I would do this b'shetach. We would go out and see the places we're going to talk about, but not for today. Maybe perhaps for some other time. Parshat Vayechi, it has somewhat of an ironic name. It's called Parshat Vayechi, which of course means, and he lived, and it's all about the death of Yaakov. Not unlike Parshat Chaye Sarah, which is about Sarah's death. Maybe that's just material for a nice opening joke, or maybe there's some philosophy in that. Maybe there's some philosophy in that in terms of the attitude of how we look at what we focus on when someone dies. But in any case, Parshat Vayechi focuses on the death of Yaakov, and there's a lot of emphasis not only on death, but on burial. And on the importance of being buried, specifically in Eretz Yisrael. And there are three separate places in the Parsha where the concept of being buried in Eretz Yisrael and the significance of the place in which one is buried in Eretz Yisrael becomes relevant. Both at the very beginning of the Parsha, which these sources that I'm about to read are not on the sheet, but at the very beginning of the Parsha, the very first thing we read, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim, 17 shana, Vayhi me Yaakov shnei chayav sheva shanim v'abimu me'at shana. He lived to the age of 147, the last 17 years of his life in Mitzrayim. Vayikrivu yemei Yisrael lamut. And he realized that he was going to die soon. Vayikra levnoli Yosef. He calls his son Yosef. What does a man say to his son shortly before he dies? This is what he was concerned with. Vayomer lo imna matzati chen b'einecha simna yadcha tachet yirechi. He asks Yosef to take an oath, to swear. What does he have to swear about? Don't bury me here in Egypt. I want to be buried with my ancestors. So please bring me up, carry me out after I die from Mitzrayim. And I want to be buried with my father Yitzchak and my grandfather Abraham. And of course that took place in Me'arat HaMachpelah, in Hebron. So that's how the Parsha begins, with Yaakov. And he returns to this point also in the middle of the Parsha. It's very important to him. And there's two separate points there. One, Al na tik bereini b'mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. But rather in Eretz Yisrael. Not just anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, but specifically I want to be buried in Me'arat Machpelah. And I think we talked about this a bit on Parshat Chaye Sarah in this class. Those who were here, if I remember correctly, we spoke about Hebron, and I think we mentioned also those psukim. That's the way the Parsha begins. The end of the Parsha, the very last words in the Parsha, which are also, of course, the very last words in the book of Bereshit. Vayomer Yosef Elechav. Anochi Met. Yosef is now approaching his death. Velokim pakod yifkod etchem. Ve'he'ala etchem min ha'aretz hazot. El ha'aretz shenishba l'Abraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Very, very important. Yosef said, even though I'm going to die, and even though we're all going to die here in Mitzrayim, and even though they knew already that they were going to be in Mitzrayim for quite a while, a number of generations. But pakod yifkod, one day God's going to remember you, and you're going to leave Eretz Mitzrayim. One day your descendants are going to leave Mitzrayim, and they're going to be brought back to Eretz Yisrael. Vayashba Yosef et b'nei Yisrael lemor, he made them swear also. Pakod yifkod elokim etchem, ve'ha'alitem et atzmotai mizeh. And therefore when that happens, when you finally come out of Mitzrayim and go to Eretz Yisrael, which is going to be a few hundred years in the future, take my bones, because that's all that will be left by then, and bring those up also. And in fact, and it says, the last words in the book of Bereshit, Vayamot Yosef ben Me'a ve'esher shanim, Vayachantu oto, and they embalmed him, they made him into a mummy, essentially, Vayisem ba'aron b'Mitzrayim. He was placed in a coffin in Mitzrayim, but not buried. He was placed in a coffin, awaiting burial. Burial that took place only a few hundred years later. And in fact, in Parshat Bishalach, we read that when they left Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu took Vaikach Moshe Tatzmot Yosef Imo. And in the book of Yoshua, we read that Yoshua later carried those bones into Eretz Yisrael, and they were eventually buried where? In Shechem. So the Parsha begins with Yaakov making his son Yosef swear not to bury him in Mitzrayim, but rather to bury him in a specific place in Me'arat HaMachpelah in Hebron. And the Parsha ends with Yosef making his brothers swear unlike his father, it's not going to happen immediately. He's going to have to wait a few hundred years to be buried. But ultimately, that he'd be taken out of Mitzrayim. And it's actually the bones of Yosef, if you will, that lead Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and lead them into Eretz Yisrael. And eventually Yosef is laid to rest in Shechem. In addition to these two places, there's also a third mention of this in the book of Bereshit. And that's the subject I want to focus on in this morning's shiur. I gave you the one pasuk there on the page, but actually let me just read it to you in context also. Back towards the beginning of the parsha, after the pesukim that we read earlier, after Yosef, in fact, does swear to Yaakov and promise that he will make sure to bury him in Maratz Machpelah. Then we read, "Vayhi acharei advarim ma'ilam," from the beginning of Perek Memchet, after that, sometime afterwards, "Vayomer leYosef, hinei avicha choleh," he hears that the end is really approaching, and he takes his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim, to Yaakov. And this is the scene where Yaakov does basically two things. First of all, he informs Yosef that he's going to be not one tribe, but two. Instead of the Shevet Yosef, the other brothers, each brother became a Shevet. Shevet Binyamin, and Shevet Reuven, and Shevet Yehuda. But that Yosef is not going to be Shevet Yosef, but actually there'll be two tribes that come from Yosef. Right? That Ephraim and Menashe, Kiru, Vein, Vishimon, Yuli, that they'll be considered as if they're my sons. And this is a form of turning Yosef into the Bechor, into the as if he was the firstborn, because the Bechor gets a double inheritance. And in that same context, of course, he also gives the bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, bracha that Jewish fathers repeat to their sons, Ara Yomazeh, Yisimcha Elohim ke Ephraim Uchim Menashe. And in the context of that also, he famously switches his hands and makes Ephraim, the younger one, into the Bechor over the older one. In the middle of that whole discussion, there's one pasuk that seems completely out of place. And that's the pasuk that's on your page, but let me just read it in context. Pasuk Vav. That's from Pasuk Hey. Va'ata shnei banecha hanoladim lecha be'eretz Mitzrayim ad bo'i elecha Mitzrayim ha'lihem. Your two sons, the ones who were born in Mitzrayim before I came here, they're going to be like, they're my sons. Ephraim and Menashe, Kiru, Vein, Mishimon, Yuli. And then he tells them in Pasuk Vav, any other children, you're not going to have an infinite number of tribes. No, that's not on the sheet. Maybe I should have put the whole passage on, I apologize. I'll get to that Pasuk in one second. And then he says, in Pasuk Zion, now the first verse that's on the page, he then turns to something that seems completely irrelevant. He says, "Va'ani, and me, and I, bevawimi Padan. When I came back from Padan Aram, so many decades ago, when I came back from being in the house of Lavan, Meita alai Rachel be'eretz Kenaan baderech. My wife Rachel died on the road as we were traveling. Be'od kivrat eretz lavo Ephrata, a short distance away from some place called Ephrat, ve'ekbireh hasham, and I buried her there, b'derech Ephrat, hi beit lachem. I buried her there, on the road to Ephrat, which is beit lechem." And then, the story continues as if that parenthetical remark had not been made. "Vayar Yisrael b'nei Yosef, v'yomer mi'ela." He says, "Who are these two boys that are with you?" And Yosef tells them, "They're my sons, Ephraim and Menashe," and Yaakov blesses them, etc. Now there's the entire passage here discusses Ephraim and Menashe. And in the middle, there's this one pasuk that seems irrelevant. He says, "By the way, you should know," something that of course they all knew, "that my wife Rachel died in Eretz Canaan, and I buried her in a place that's going to become known as Kever Rachel. And I buried her, Be'od Kivrat Eretz Lavo Ephrata. On the way, short distance away from Ephrat, he beit lechem." So, if our parsha discusses the site of Yaakov's burial in Miratz Machpelah, in Hebron, and alludes to, and begins the discussion of, Yosef's burial, that's ultimately discussed in the book of Yeshua, in Shechem, the burial of Rachel, Bederech Ephrat, he beit lechem, is also emphasized in our parsha, but unlike Yaakov and Yosef, it's unclear what the context is, why the death and burial of Rachel was already told to us. earlier in the book of Bereishit when it actually happened. Why does Yaakov bring this up here while he's talking to Yosef and about to bless Yosef's children? The Midrashim discuss this, and Rashi, there's a number of different Midrashim that say very similar things, and Rashi quotes one of them. So if you look at the second source on the page.
This was Yosef's initiative to bring his sons to him?
Seems to be. Seems that it was. At least according to the simple reading of the Psukim. Yeah. Va'ani bevoi mipadan, Rashi says. Why is Yaakov bringing this up? Va'afal pi, this is Rashi. Va'afal pi shani matriach alecha laholicheni lihikaver be'eretz Kanaan. V'lo kach asiti l'imecha sh'rei samuch lebet lechem meta. V'rek b'rei ha'sham v'lo holachtiha afil lebet lechem lachnisa l'aretz v'yadati sh'yesh b'libcha alai tar'omet. According to this midrash that Rashi quotes, to answer our question, why did Yaakov bring this up here? He said, I know, Yaakov said to Yosef, I know what you're thinking. Earlier, I asked you to promise me that you will take me all the way from Mitzrayim. Right? And this wasn't like today that you just get on an El Al jet, right? Today, people are dying anywhere in the world and they're buried in Eretz Yisrael. It's even today a little bit complicated, but in those days, right? I'm asking you to take me all the way across a desert, traveling for days and days and days to bury me in Merat HaMachpelah. And I know that Rachel, your mother, Yosef, I didn't do that for her. She's not buried next to me where I'm going to be buried in Merat HaMachpelah. Somebody else is going to be buried next to me. He's already buried there. Leah.
Yeah.
She was buried in Merat HaMachpelah, not your mother. And not a... What? No, not you, God forbid. You're not talking about where you're buried. Leah Imenu, right, is buried in Merat HaMachpelah. He didn't bury Rachel there. And not only that, but he didn't even bother to bury her. And from where she died to Hebron is much closer, right? Yaakov is asking him to schlep him, so to speak, from Mitzrayim all the way to Hebron. Rachel died much closer to Hebron, and he didn't take her to Hebron. And not only that, he didn't even bother to bury her properly in Beit Lechem. But he buried her on the side of a road someplace. V'yadean, he said, says Yaakov according to the Midrash, she'yesh b'libcha alai taromet. I know that you're very troubled by this, right? You feel that I treated your mother with disrespect, that she died and I just, as it were, dumped her on the side of the road someplace. But now I'm asking you... But now, right, that's what it sounds like. And I'm asking you to take me all the way from Mitzrayim and bury me next to my wife, who's not your mother, Leah, in Merat HaMachpelah. But, says the Midrash, filling in what perhaps Yaakov meant, Aval Dalecha, I want you to understand that I didn't just stop doing that. I didn't just dump her there, and it wasn't that I didn't care, and it wasn't that I couldn't be bothered. No. Shalpi HaDibur Kvarti Hashem. I buried her there because I received a prophecy telling me to bury her there. Why? Shetehei Le'ezra Levaneha. Because in the future, she's going to be able to help her children. When? Kishigle otam nivuzaradan. Hundreds and hundreds of years from now. There's going to be a Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and it's going to be destroyed by the Babylonians. And the children of Rachel, and of the other mothers also, are going to be taken to Galut, to Babylonia. V'hayu ovrim derech sham, and they're going to pass by her grave. Yatzeit Rachel al kivra, Rachel, as it were, is going to come out of her grave, metaphorically, of course. Uvocha, and she's going to cry. Umivakeshet aleha rachamim, aleihem rachamim, and she's going to ask for mercy for them. Shenemar, quoting Psukim in Yirmiyahu, and let's read the full, Rashi quotes only the summary. Let's open up the book of Yirmiyahu, and I'll read the full passage, very well-known passage, and not very lengthy. Lamed Aleph, Yud Dalet, Ko Amar Hashem, Kol B'Ramah Nishma, a voice is heard in Ramah, Nehi, Bechi, Tamrurim, a voice that's crying and wailing and moaning and very, very bitter cry. What is this voice that's heard in Ramah? Rachel, Mevaka Al Baneha, she's crying for her sons, Me'ana Lihi Nachem Al Baneha Ki Einen. She refuses to be consoled, just like Yaakov himself When Yosef, right. When Yosef, he thought was dead, Vayimayen lihinachem, he refused to be comforted. Also Rachel, his wife, is going to cry and refuse to be comforted for her children. Ki einenu. And the Nevuah then continues, Ko amar Hashem. Hashem responds to Rachel. Min I kolech mi bechi. Stop crying. Ve'enayich min dima. Why? Why should you stop crying? Ki yesh sachar lefulateich. Your action to cry for your children has reward. It produced results. Vishavu me'er hatsoyev. Your sons will come back from this galut that they're going to is temporary. They're going to come back. V'yesh tikva na la'acharitech neum Hashem, v'shavu banim l'gvulam. And according to the Midrash, that's what Yaakov was saying to Yosef. Don't think. I know that I just asked you to take me from Mitzrayim and bury me in Hebron. And I didn't do that for your mother. And I didn't even bury her properly in Beit Lechem. I buried her stam on the side of a road. But don't think I did that because of a lack of concern. No, there was a good reason for that. Because your mother, Rachel, after her death, is going to be able to bring about the Geulah. Because when the children are going to be going out into exile, they're going to pass her grave, and she's going to be able to cry for them. And God will hear her cry, and that's what's going to bring about the ultimate Veshavu Banim Gvulam. That's why she's buried there. It still doesn't explain exactly why he said.
Think he would be after he's asked to have his body taken, it would make.
Correct. I agree with you. It's still a little bit difficult. It seems even according to that it would have been better a few psukim earlier. But it could be that it's here because this is the passage where he's focusing dafka on Yosef's sons, right? And here he's talking about how much he loves Yosef, and how much Yosef means to him that his two sons are going to become two tribes instead of just one. And it's as if perhaps Yosef is looking at him and he's saying, well, apparently, you know, but I agree with you, that the question is better than the answer. It's a difficulty still. Okay. Now, if you look at the title I put on the source sheet, I wrote, where is the real Kever Rachel, and does it matter? Okay, and those are two separate questions, and I'd like to, in the next 40 minutes or so, address them both. First of all, where is Kever Rachel, and does it matter? That's the second question. So let's talk about the first question. Where is Kever Rachel? Now, you might be saying to me, there's a sign. I drive past it every time I come into Yerushalayim. It says Kever Rachel, that direction. And indeed, the site known as Kever Rachel. Well, actually, let me preface this with the following. There are many, many what's called Kivrei Tzadikim, all over this country. Many, many sites where people go to pray at the graves of great people from all generations, from the time of Tanakh, all the way through much more recent, and everything in between. And the question of whether that's an appropriate thing to do, and whether we should be praying at those sites, that's the second half. That's the does it matter question. Or that's part of the does it matter question. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. But many of these sites that are known as, you know, the tomb of so-and-so are of, at the very least, questionable accuracy. Some of them are questionably, some of them are almost definitely wrong, and some of them are definitely wrong. You know, for example, there's a site on Hartzion right outside the old city walls called Kever David. And in America, there used to be an old joke, who's buried in Grant's tomb, right? And then obviously the answer is supposed to be Grant. But here it's not true, because if you ask me who's buried in Kever David, the answer is I don't know, but I do know who's not buried there, and that's David. And the reason I know that is that the Tanakh says explicitly that David was buried somewhere else. It says explicitly that David was buried in Ir David, and the site known as Kever David is not in Ir David.
So why is it?
Why is it? That's a good question. It's a Mesorah that apparently began among the Christians. There are all kinds of theories. I won't go into it now. It's possible that it may have been the site of the graves of some of the later kings of Malchei Beit David, and that might have been the source of the mistake. But there are plenty of other sites that, you know, a few weeks ago I was at Nevi Samuel, right, which is known as Kever Shmuel Anavi.
Right.
And the old joke is maybe Shmuel Bet is buried there, but Shmuel Aleph isn't. Right? And it's almost 100% certain that that's not, because it says that Shmuel is buried. It says where he's buried, and he's not buried there. But there are people there davening, and some people will get very upset if you tell them it's not. it's not correct. Here's the point I want to make. Many of these sites, and then there are other sites that I can't tell you with as much certainty that they're wrong, but I also have no reason to know if they're correct. However, there are certain burial sites, of course, where we do have a much better indication. Obviously, the more recent ones, it's much more likely to know, you know, what's accurate. You know, if I ask you the Kever Rambam, who was buried 800 years ago, but 800 years ago is still different than 3 or 4,000 years ago. But even some of the more ancient sites, and Dafka, the ones mentioned in Parshat Vayechi, Merat HaMachpelah, we have an extremely high level of certainty that it's correct, both because of the fact that it's clear from the structure that's there, that in the time of Beit Sheni, when that structure was built, probably by Herod, it's clear that that was known to be the site. And not only that, but there's a whole very dramatic story about people who went down there and they found there a cave which, first of all, is dated exactly to the period of the Avot and matches the time period of the Avot, and it's a double cave in Merat HaMachpelah. So it's very, very, and it's right next to Hebron, it's exactly where it's supposed to be. Merat HaMachpelah is almost certainly correct. And so is Kever Yosef in Shechem. Kever Yosef in Shechem also is also very high degree of probability that it's correct. But so many of these other ones are not correct, and that itself is an interesting point. Why don't we know where Shmuel's buried? Why don't we know where David is buried? Why are there all these misorot? And again, that we'll get to at the end of this year in the question of whether Jews should care all that much where these sites
Rambam
are.
Rambam also isn't buried where his cave
is. Rambam's cave, to my knowledge, is probably accurate.
Oh,
it's very
accurate. Where it says Rambam,
I believe so. I believe so. Again, there's a tombstone there. What's there now is a modern tombstone, but they found a remnants of a tombstone that I think is the original, or if not, it's from a few hundred years later. So, and it's much more recent also. But the site of Kever Rachel is highly questionable, not just today. All the way back, even in the time of Chazal, there were discussions about where the real Kever Rachel is. And of course, there's a site that's known today as Kever Rachel. And that site was known as Kever Rachel. The earliest written sources we have about that are actually from Christian sources at the beginning of the Common Era, 1st century, 2nd century of the Common Era, and also 3rd and 4th century. But it's quite likely that those are the earliest written sources we have. It's quite likely that those Christian sources were based on Jewish Misora. The first Christians were Jews anyway. And in all likelihood, they're reflecting a tradition that the Jews had. The Ramban, interestingly enough, when he came here in the 13th century, about 700 years ago, the Ramban, he wrote, originally, when he wrote his Perush on Bereshit, he assumed that Kever Rachel was someplace else. And in a few minutes we'll discuss where he thought it was. But he originally assumed that Kever Rachel was someplace else. When he came to Eretz Yisrael at the end of his life, he writes in his commentary to Sefer Bereshit, and he came here, and he visited the site that was known as Kever Rachel, which is assumedly the same site that is known that way today. And he then became convinced that he was wrong, and that the site known as Kever Rachel is, in fact, you know, he had an alternate site originally in mind. But when he came to Eretz Yisrael and he saw it with his own eyes, he became convinced that Kever Rachel is, in fact, Kever Rachel. However, others who've come here much more recently, again, both non-Jewish researchers and a number of Jewish scholars as well, and rabbis, have begun to question that Mesorah and to return to the alternate site. And basically, there are two possible locations for Kever Rachel, at least two. And let's take a look and try to understand what the arguments are for either one. So I gave you this map. So on the map, and there's a picture there also, it didn't come out so well in the photocopy. I'll get to the picture in a few minutes. But if you look at the map, this is a map that shows the journey of Yaakov Avinu when he returned from Lavan's house, which we read about in Parshat Vayishlach. Okay? Yaakov was coming from Charan. Charan is where Lavan was, in today's Syria, northeast of Eretz Yisrael. Beyond Charan, by the way, and this is going to be important, also to the northeast, in the same general direction of where Yaakov was coming from, but even further away is Bavel. Okay, and that's important to remember. So if you look at the arrows, the path here, it shows us how Yaakov came into Eretz Canaan. He entered Eretz Canaan in what's known as Ma'avar Yabok. That's where he wrestled with the angel. And from there he crossed over the Yarden, And his first place he came to was Shechem, just like his grandfather Avraham. When Avraham first came to Eretz Yisrael, the first time he followed the same route. And this is how Avraham entered Eretz Yisrael as well. First place he came to was also Shechem. When Yaakov came to Shechem, of course, if we remember, he had some incidents there. His daughter Dinah was taken and raped. And this resulted ultimately in the battle and the destruction of the city of Shechem by Shimon Velevi, which we also talked about a few weeks ago. There Yaakov also bought a piece of land. The first place he bought land, and perhaps that's the land on which Yosef was ultimately buried. And then it tells us that Yaakov traveled from Shechem. He decided he's going to go see his father in Hebron. And Hebron is to the south of Shechem, of course. He traveled south from Shechem and he reached Beit El. And in Beit El, he had a nevuah. And let me just read now the psukim, which I also didn't put on the sheet, but the psukim that describe, we have here the pasuk from this week's parsha, where Yaakov recalled the death and burial of Rachel. But let me just read to you from Parsha Vayishlach, the way it actually happened, so to speak. This is in Perek Lamed Hei. Pasuk Tetzayin. Vayis'u mi Beit El. Okay, so again, Yaakov had started in Haran, he came to Shechem. He traveled from Shechem to Beit El. He stopped off in Beit El. And now he's continuing further on the way to Hebron. So Vayis'u mi Beit El. He leaves Beit El. Vayhi od kivrat eretz lavo Efrata. That's the same expression that we have in our pasuk in Parshat Vayechi. When there was still a kivrat eretz, which seems to be a unit of measure, that's how Rashi understands it at least, a certain distance, short distance, to come to a place known as Efrat. Vateled Rachel, vatekash balidita. Rachel goes into labor, and as we know, she had a difficult labor. Difficult. She died in childbirth. Tragically, she died in childbirth. She named her son Ben Oni. Perhaps we'll return to that name in a few minutes. Yaakov changed the name slightly from Ben Oni, which means the child of my suffering, to Binyamin. Batamat Rachel, batikaver bederech Efrata hi Beit Lechem. She was buried on the way to Efrati Beit Lechem. Vayatzev Yaakov Matseva al Kivurata. Yaakov placed a matseva, placed a monument on her grave. He matsevet kivurat Rachel ad hayom. This is the monument known as Kever Rachel ad hayom, till this day. Now, till this day doesn't mean till this day, of course. It means till the day that the Torah was given. But we see from that already when the Torah was given, in the time of Yitziat Mitzrayim and the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and Yoshua bin Nun, that generation, it was already known where Kever Rachel is. And apparently there had a monument that Yaakov placed there, remained there, for at least a few hundred years. And then, from there, where did Yaakov go after that? Then it tells us that he continued a few psukim later, Pasuk Chavzayim, Vayavo Yaakov El Yitzchak, Aviv Mamre Kiryat Arba'i Hebron. He then continued on the way from there, and he went to ultimately to Hebron. Okay. So, by the way, as you see from the arrows on the map there, Yaakov in this journey passed through all three of the sites that are discussed in this week's parsha. He first came to Shechem, where Yosef was later buried. On the way, he actually buried Rachel in Kever Rachel, wherever that is. And ultimately, he came to Hebron, and Hebron is the site of Marat Machpelah, where Avraham and Yitzchak were buried, Avraham was buried at that point, Yitzchak was still alive. Later, Yitzchak was buried there, and ultimately, Yaakov himself was also buried there. But where is Kever Rachel? So we're told very clearly, it's Be'od Kivrat Eretz Lavo Efrata. It is on the way to a place called Efrat, hi Beit Lechem. It is a distance known as Kivrat Eretz, and we don't know exactly what that distance is, but assumedly a short distance, a few kilometers maybe in today's terms, outside of Beit Lechem, and in which direction of Efrat, hi Beit Lechem? North, because he was traveling from the north to the south, and he was almost there, almost at Beit Lechem, And there, a Kivrat Eretz, north of Beit Lechem, that's where Kever Rachel should be. And in fact, the site known as Kever Rachel today seems to fit that description quite well. Today it's at the outskirts of the modern city of Beit Lechem, but the ancient city of Beit Lechem is smaller, and it's a little bit up the road. But in fact, it's on the ancient road. It's called Derech HaAvot, the ancient road that goes, Road 60 today, that goes north and south through the mountains, just outside of Beit Lechem. I don't know what a Kivrat Eretz is, but it seems reasonable. It's a few kilometers north of Beit Lechem on the main road. And that's what the Ramban saw when he came here. The Ramban, who originally had a different theory, came here and he saw with his own eyes many things, by the way. I tell people this all the time. This is why I like to take people on Tehillim. We have a privilege that our ancestors didn't have. We can learn Tanakh in Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban himself changed certain things when he came to Eretz Yisrael. There are things that other Rishonim, I like to take people to Hebron, for example, and show them things that Rashi, it seems, didn't understand. You read Rashi, and he has certain questions, and when you stand on top of the mountain and look, you see the answer. Rashi tries to figure out an answer, because he didn't have the privilege. And we have a privilege that Rashi himself didn't have. And the Ramban did get that privilege. So the Ramban, who originally thought Kever Rachel was someplace else, and in a minute we'll talk about where he thought it was, came here, and they took him to this place, and he said, look, here there's an ancient Masorah that this is Kever Rachel. And look, this is Beit Lechem. And the Ramban, who didn't necessarily have this exact map, but went to all these places and knew all this, said, oh, okay, now I see. This is Kever Rachel. It's Be'od Kivrat Eretz Lavo Efrata. There's an ancient Masorah that this is where it is. And it's not like, you know, today we have these Masorot that we have to make jokes that maybe Shmuel Betz there, not Shmuel Av, because it can't be true. But this not only can be true, it looks absolutely correct. Why in the world would you think otherwise? What's Efrat? Today there's a town called Efrat. And by the way, in parentheses, there's a whole machloket if it should be called Efrat or Efrata.
I know.
Right? And the people who founded the town wanted to call it Efrat, and the governance system called it an Efrata, and the signs have both versions. And it's connected indirectly to this story, actually. Whether it is Efrat, or whether Efrata is something else, whether Efrat and Beit Lechem are the same. But the point is this, Efrat, it seems, was the ancient name for the city of Beit Lechem. We have that here. Efrat hi Beit Lechem. And there are also other places in Tanakh where Beit Lechem is called Efrat. For example, in Micha, Vata Beit Lechem Efrata. Sa'ir lihiyot ba'alfei Yehuda. So we see that Beit Lechem, which is in the land of Yehuda, is called Efrat. Or in the book of Rut, we know that the story of Rut and Boaz took place in a place called Beit Lechem Yehuda. And by the way, that's important, not just Beit Lechem Yehuda, remember that. And it's there that later on David HaMelech was born. And at the very end of the book of Rut, when the happy end of the book of Rut, when Boaz agreed to marry Ruth, and she became pregnant, and then she had a child. The women of Beit Lechem gave her a bracha, and among the things they said to her was, no, I'm sorry, the men of Beit Lechem gave a bracha to Boaz, and they said that your wife Ruth should be like Sarah and Rachel, and it also says, Va'asechayil be'efrata, ukra shem be'Beit Lechem. Right? Based on that pasuk, the elementary school in Efrat today is called Beit Sefer Asechayil, because Asechayil be'efrata. Right? So here also you see that Beit Lechem is called Efrat. So everything seems to fit. And why am I talking about this? It seems like, just like I told you, some of these grave sites seem to be wrong. I told you Marat Machpelah seems right, and Kever Yosef seems right. So does Kever Rachel. It's exactly where it's supposed to be. It's north of Efrat, e Beit Lechem, outside of the city, a short distance on the road. Except that there are some problems with that. And the problems become clear once you have a sense of geography. And let's start with the midrash of Rachel crying as her children leave Yerushalayim on their way to Galut in Bavel. If you look back at the map, you will see that Yerushalayim, which is just north of Beit Lechem, and today, of course, modern Yerushalayim, Beit Lechem border on each other, but the ancient cities are, Yerushalayim, what we call the old city, and Beit Lechem, the old city of Beit Lechem. So they're not far from each other, but they're separate locations. And Bavel is north of Yerushalayim. In other words, if one were being taken off in chains by the Babylonians from Yerushalayim on the way to exile, those prisoners would be taken in the reverse path that Yaakov came from. Yaakov came from Haran, which I told you is on the way from Babylonia. He came from the north to the south. So somebody who was going from Yerushalayim would have been taken north from Yerushalayim, would have passed Beit El, would have later passed Shechem, and ultimately Haran, Bavel, but they would not have passed Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem is in the wrong direction. So, how can they be, if Rachel's buried there because she's supposed to cry for her children on their way to Bavel, how is that possible? You're not going to pass her grave. Furthermore, what did Yirmiyahu say in the psukim that the Midrash understands as referring to? The pasuk never said that has anything to do with where she's buried. But the Midrash that we started with connects it to that. And the Midrash says, Kol Birama Nishma. There's a place called Ramah. And Ramah is today known as probably the Arab neighborhood of Aram today. Today it's one of the neighborhoods in the north of Yerushalayim. It's in the land of Binyamin. North of the old city of Yerushalayim, north of biblical Yerushalayim, in the land of Binyamin, which, by the way, kind of makes sense that that's where Rachel ought to be buried, right? Binyamin was born there, right? Kind of makes sense that maybe, that's not a proof, but I'm just saying it fits in very nicely if she's buried near Ramah, because Ramah is in the land of Binyamin. It makes sense that perhaps that's where Binyamin was born, where he later inherited the land that he was born on. It's kind of nice if she's buried in the territory of one of her children and not buried in the territory of Yehuda, who's one of Leah's children, right? That's not a proof, but it just fits in. Some, by the way, understand the name Binyamin. In Tanakh, in the book of Bereshit at least, Yamin and Smol means north and south, right? When we draw maps, we put north at the top. Because that's because of the compass. Magnetic compass points north. So, right? Since the compass was invented, maps are drawn. But in the ancient world, maps were drawn with east at the top. Okay, because that's where the sun rises. That's the way people used to think. So they would just draw the map like this. Right? That's the way they used to draw maps. And therefore, so we think of north as up. But north on this map would be to the left, and south would be to the right. And that's the way they used to talk about it. Yaakov said to Lot, Im hasmol ve'emina v'im hayamin v'asmi'ila. If you go left, I'll go right. If you go right, I'll go left. He was talking about north and south. And Lot just chose to do neither. Lot went east, and that's how Lot got into trouble. So Binyamin, some suggest, might mean the son of the north, because he's buried in the northern part of the country, north of Yerushalayim.
Where is that on this map?
Ramah's not on the map, but it's not far from Beit El. Okay? So the Ramban, that's what the Ramban wrote. The Ramban initially, before coming to Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban assumed that Rachel's buried near Ramah. Because Yirmiyahu says, Kol b'Ramah. And also, it makes sense that they would pass Ramah on the way to there. Now, also, by the way, if you remember the Pesukim we read in Vayishlach, it sounds like she's buried shortly after leaving Beit El. Again, the Pesukim were Vayisumi Beit El. They left Beit El. Vayihi od kivrat eretz levo Efrata. So it sounds like it's shortly after leaving Beit El. And therefore the Ramban initially assumed that she was buried near Beit El, near Ramah, in the territory of Binyamin, north of Yerushalayim, in a place where the Golim that were on their way to Bavel would pass her grave. And that's why Yirmiyahu said that the voice of Rachel crying is heard in Ramah. And that all made sense. Until he came here, he saw that Beit Lechem is not so close to Ramah. Beit Lechem is really far away. And he saw the site of where they showed him Kibbutz Rachel is, and he said, okay, it doesn't work out. So he changed his position and adopted the position that seems to fit those psukim. But you still have some problems with that. You have problems with the fact that the Golim, on their way to Bavel, are not going to pass her grave. Mm-hmm. But the problems are worse than that. Because if you look at the next source of it, there seems to be an explicit pasuk in the book of Shmuel that says Kever Rachel is not in the place that it's known as today. Shmuel, in the book of Shmuel, we have in the beginning of the book the story of Shaul. Shaul, who was anointed by Shmuel to be the first king. And if you remember the story, Shaul, who lived in Givat Shaul, it later became known as, not the place known as Givat Shaul today, it's near Pisgat Ze'ev today. But what happened was, his father's donkeys ran away, and he had to go look for the donkeys. And he went all over the country looking for the donkeys, and then he was about to give up, and someone said, go talk to Shmuel, maybe he can help you find the donkeys, he's a prophet. And he came to Shmuel, and Shmuel said, don't worry about the donkeys, but I have something more important to tell you, you're about to become the king. Right? Yeah. And he poured oil on his head and anointed him Melech Yisrael. And Shaul was somewhat taken aback by this. And in order to encourage him, Shmuel gave him a whole bunch of simanim. He said, I'm going to tell you, all kinds of things are going to happen to you when you leave here. Random things. People are going to come up to you and say different things, and all those things ultimately happened, and that's how Shaul knew that, in fact, this wasn't just something that Shmuel made up, it was true. So one of the things he told him is, a bunch of people are going to meet you. Look at this pasuk. Belechtecha hayom me'imadi. When you leave me today, Umatzata shnei anashim. Two people will meet you. And where are they going to meet you? Im kvurat Rachel bigvul Binyamin. That's where she's buried. Bit in a place called Tzeltzach, which we don't know where it is. But next to kvurat Rachel bigvul Binyamin. V'amru elecha nimtzu atonot. And they're going to tell you that your father's donkeys were found. And that's one of the things that happened. Later on, Shaul left there, and when he got to Kvurat Rachel, these two men met him and told him about the donkeys, exactly like Shmuel said. But it says here that Kever Rachel is in Binyamin. Now, where's the border between Binyamin and Yehuda? Does anyone know? The border runs right near Yerushalayim, in old city terms. In modern terms, the border runs very, very close to this building. Okay, we're in Binyamin, but only by about a block. Okay, If you go out of the building, about a block down where the old train tracks are, that's the border between Yehuda and Binyamin. Nachal Rephaim, Amek Rephaim. Right? And on the other side, Talpiot is already in Yehuda. Okay? Which means the place known today as Kever Rachel is clearly in Yehuda. David HaMelech, who's from Yehuda, is from Beit Lechem, and it's called Beit Lechem Yehuda. We have that also in the Pasuk, in Micha, Beit Lechem Ephrata, Tzi'ir Liot Alfei Yehuda. The city of Beit Lechem is in Yehuda. But according to the book of Shmuel, Kever Rachel is in Binyamin. Which is one of the reasons that the Ramban originally thought. Because Ramah and Beit El and all those places in the area north of Yerushalayim that you pass on the way to Babel, that's all in Binyamin. But here you have an explicit Beferish Pasuk that says that she's buried apparently in Binyamin. So the Ramban left that theory. But in modern times, archaeological remains have resuscitated the northern theory. And there's actually a place that was first suggested by a French archaeologist in the 19th century called Clermont-Ginot, Charles Clermont-Ginot, also the archaeologist McAllister, two Christian archaeologists who came here, and later a number of contemporary researchers and a number of contemporary rabbis have adopted this theory. There's a place known by the local Arabs as Kubur Bani Israel in Arabic. Okay, I don't know how many of us speak Arabic, but it's not hard to figure out what that means. Kubur Bani Israel is Arabic for Kever Bnei Israel. And I gave you a little picture. First of all, on the map, I showed you where it is. Kubur Bani Israel. This is actually a picture. It didn't come out so well. But in this site, and in a minute I'll tell you where this site is, there are these ancient tombs. Very, very large monuments. The kind of monuments that were used in ancient times for tombs. They're dated archaeologically to around the time of Rachel. The problem is they're a couple hundred years too early. They're 4,000 years old. They're about 200 years too early, or 300 years too early, so that's a little bit of a problem. But those who adopt this theory say, what's 200-300 years when you deal with 4,000 years? They're definitely from the time of the Avot, or maybe just before the time of the Avot. In today's terms, those who are familiar, there's a yishuv called Adam. Right, if you leave from Pisgat Ze'ev up towards Binyamin, the area of Binyamin, right where the big Rami Levi is there, and if you go into Shiloh or Ophrah or any of those places, there's a traffic circle where you make a left. But if you go straight, you get into the yishuv of Adam, and you pass over a wadi called Nachal Prat, beginning of Wadi Kelt. Okay, Nachal Prat, remember that name. And these graves, these monuments, Kubur Bani Yisrael, are in the Nachal, right there, just off the road. You can see them nicely also from the Yishuv Adam. And the theory says the following. In the territory of Binyamin, there's a city called, in the book of Yoshua, it's called Haparah. Haparah. And the Navi Yirmiyahu also, who comes from Anatot, Anatot is also near there. Today's Anata, those who are familiar, also on the other side of Pisgat Zeev. So there's a Nevuah Yirmiyahu, he was told to go to Nachal Prat, or to Nahar Prat, it says here. Now Nahar Prat means the Euphrates River. And some of the Rishonim were very confused. He had to go there, and there's this symbolic scene there where he goes there. He was told to put this piece of clothing in the river and come back and get it a year later, and it's very difficult how he could travel all the way to the Euphrates until they realize, in modern times, the spring that's there is known as by the Arabs as Ein Farah. And it then became clear that there's a city called Haparah, and therefore the Nachal must have been known as Nachal Prat, and it's right near Anatot, and that makes sense. Okay, so the modern theory suggests that the Ephrat that's mentioned in the Pasuk is not the Ephrat that we know about in Yehudah, but there remains of an ancient city there. And we know there was a city called Haparah. Ephrat and Haparah are similar. Okay? And they're right near Kubur Bani Israel. But it says that Ephrat is Beit Lechem. True. But remember that when the book of Ruth speaks of Beit Lechem, it specifically refers to it as Beit Lechem Yehuda. Why do we have to call it Beit Lechem Yehuda? Because there is more than one city called Beit Lechem. Why would the city be called Beit Lechem? It's where they grew wheat. There's a Beit Lechem in Yehuda. There's also Beit Lechem in the Galil. And it turns out, in the book of Nehemiah, that there's also Beit Lechem in Binyamin. We don't know where it was. But there's a list here of the cities that the people who came back in Shivat Zion, the people who came back from Bavel, where they settled. And we have a bunch of cities that we know about. They're in Binyamin. Bnei Giv'on. Giv'on is in Binyamin. And then we have Beit Lechem. Netofah, that's in Binyamin. Anatot is in Binyamin. In the list of cities of Binyamin, there's a place called Beit Lechem. So one second. There is a place called Beit Lechem Yehuda. It's true. And Beit Lechem Yehuda was known as Ephrat. That's true. But there's a place called, if not Ephrat, something similar to Ephrat in Binyamin. And there's a place called Beit Lechem in Binyamin. So maybe Ephrati Beit Lechem is not Beit Lechem Yehuda, but it's near today's Ein Farah, near today's Nachal Prat, where we have the graves that are known by the ancient Arab tradition as Kubur Bani Israel. Graves that are near a place that was called Prat, which might be Ephrat, which could very well be Beit Lechem in Binyamin. And guess what else is right near there? Ramah. So in other words, we can move Kever Rachel, if you will. And this is what Charles Clermont Guinot first suggested, and many others now have agreed with his approach. And we could say, one other archaeological point. In the city of Beit Lechem, that's Beit Lechem Yehuda, there are archaeological remains from the time of the first Beit HaMikdash and earlier, meaning from the time of David, for example, and Boaz. But no remains have been found there from much earlier. Meaning it's not even clear that such a city existed in the time of Rachel. When David HaMelech was born in Beit Lechem Yehuda, it existed. We have archaeological evidence. But the fact that they haven't found it doesn't mean it's not there. But they have not found any evidence that there was even a city called Beit Lechem or that there was even a city at that site in the time of Avot. But guess what? In Nachal Prat, there is. There is evidence of a city from that time. And those graves are from approximately that time. So we have this site that's near a place that could perhaps be called Ephrati Beit Lechem, a different Beit Lechem and a different Ephrat, but it could be called Ephrati Beit Lechem. It happens to be on the road north of Yerushalayim, the road that Yaakov might have passed just after he left Beit El before ultimately going to Hebron. It would also be on the road that the people on their way from Yerushalayim to Babel would later pass, so Rachel could be crying for her children. And Yirmiyahu could say about that site, Kol Birama Nishma, because if she was crying at the Kubur Bani Israel, then up on the hill they'd hear her crying, metaphorically of course, in Ramah. And that could be the site that Yaakov was telling his son Yosef where he buried her. And then we would say to the Ramban, you were right the first time and you should have not changed your position. Ad hayom hazeh. There are arguments. But there are still some problems with that shita as well, including the fact that the graves there don't exactly meet and it would also mean that the Pesukim in Shmuel now makes sense. When Shmuel told Shaul that they're going to meet you, Bigvul Binyamin, Bigvurat Rachel, that's true because it's in Binyamin. So we have now two possible sites of Kever Rachel. If you want, you can go to Kever Rachel in Yehuda, and you can also go to, and if we're going to take a tool, we could go to both, and we could Kever Rachel Aleph and Kever, no Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet, but Rachel Aleph and Rachel Bet. And those are the two possibilities where Rachel's buried. Doesn't matter. I mean, this is interesting. But does it matter spiritually? So first of all, we have to ask a question of why is it that although these grave sites are known, we don't really know. Why did no one bother to remember and mark very clearly where David was buried and where Shmuel was buried and all these other sites? Why do we have no idea where so many other of the great figures of... Why do we not know where Yahushua is buried? Today, it's very popular for people to go and pray at grave sites. But it's not clear that this was always a Jewish tradition. And in fact, there's a significant halachic question as to whether one should be doing this in the first place. And I give you here some halachic sources. There's a pasuk in Dvarim. There's a series of isurim mentioned here, prohibitions, that all are indirectly related to Avodah Zarah. None of these are actual idol worship. That's a different prohibition. But we have here a series of prohibitions that are indirectly related to the prohibitions of worshiping idols. Lo yimatze b'cha ma'avir b'no v'ito ba'esh. That has to do with the Avodah, the worship of Molech. Kosein k'samim, magic is prohibited. Me'onein minachesh u'michashef. The chover chaver, all these things are various types of necromancy or fortune-telling and all kinds of pagan practices where they try to, tell the future. All these things are prohibited. V'shoel o v'yidoni, that's another type of telling the future, or things have to do with speaking to dead people. Shaul, later on, went to an Eshet Baal HaTov, you might remember. That was against the halacha. V'doresh el hametim. And also, you're not allowed to lidrosh el hametim. What does that mean? It's an isur d'oraita. You're not allowed to doresh el hametim. What does that mean? So the Shulchan Aruch in the next source tells us what it means halachically. Doresh el hametim means zes shemariv atzmo vilan beveit hakvarot kedei shetishre alav ruach hatum'ah. Apparently, there was a pagan practice that people would fast and go many days without eating, and go to sleep in a cemetery so that the forces that they believed were associated with the dead, Ruach HaTumah, and that they could use, I don't know if it's black magic or something like that. That type of pagan practice, according to Shulchan Aruch, is what's prohibited. Doresh El HaMetim is some kind of mystical practice that people used to use to try to somehow connect with the dead. We're not supposed to do that. But then, the Shach, which is one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, one of the Achronim, he writes in the next source, Nimtza b'tshuvat marach al hanodrim leilech lebeit hakvarot. People used to always not do that, not to try to, do these mystical things, but people used to take vows and used to go visit graves for some sort of a religious purpose, to try to connect with, not with the dead, but to connect with God. And some of the Achronim were against that. In other words, turning grave sites into sites of religious worship, praying to Hashem at graves, some of the Achronim were concerned that this is not a good idea because it seems too close to the prohibited practice. We're not supposed to be talking to dead people. We're not supposed to be trying to get in touch with the dead people. And it's a little bit too close to that. So some people were against it. And he quotes the Bach, who writes, Shekvar hichziku bimin hagzeh, the Bach defended the practice and said this is an established minhag, and therefore it's okay. From this shach, I see two things. First of all, I see that on the one hand, at the time of the Shach and the Bach, which is 16th, 17th century, there was an established practice of going to graves and praying at graves. But we don't find sources much earlier than that that discuss it as a standard practice. Meaning this seems to be a minhag that appeared sometime maybe in the period of the Rishonim or the early Acharonim. It doesn't seem to have been a very ancient Jewish practice. Our ancestors in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara didn't seem to go to graves too often, which might be why we don't know where the graves are in most places. On the other hand, and we have some Acharonim here who seem to be very opposed to the practice and others who are defending
Kalev.
It. Oh, very good. We're going to come back to that in 1 second. Also in the Shulchan Aruch we have here in the laws of Rosh Hashanah, there's a minhag, the Shulchan Aruch quotes a minhag. Actually, I'm sorry, it's the Rama. I should have written that. It's the Rama. It's the Rama who writes, Ashkenazi, that there is a minhag to go to visit graves during Elul, before Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
And the Be'er Heitev says, why would you do that? The Beit HaKvarot Mekom Menuchat HaTzadikim. It's a place where these righteous people are resting. And we talk Kachu Makom Kadosh V'Tahor. Fascinating. A cemetery, which is a place of tumah, mm-hmm. Cohen can't walk into there. He calls it a place of holiness and tahara.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And therefore, your prayers are accepted there. Greater. Here's an important point. So we see here that there's a debate about it. Some rabbis were opposed to it, some rabbis were in favor of it, or at least defended it. But the Be'er Heitev institutes a very important point, though. Hamid palel al kivrei tzadikim. If you are going to pray at these graves, al yasim megamato neged ametim. Make sure you're not talking to the dead people, because that's prohibited. Ach yivakesh me Hashem yitbarach sheiten aleinu alav rachamim bizchut tzadikim shochnei afar. In other words, if it's permissible, and the minhag seems to the ultimate, although the Achronim debated it, it seems to be that by now, it's a very widespread practice in many segments of the Jewish community, at least, that those who are going to defend it, one thing is clear, if you go to pray at a grave, it's okay, provided that you make sure that you're praying to God, and not praying to God in the merit of the person buried there, and not, God forbid, praying to the person buried there, or even speaking directly to the person, asking the person, it's okay, maybe, according to the Be'er Heitev, and the Bach, and the Shach quotes it, etc., and the Ramah. So we have definitely a lot of major Achronim who say it's okay to go to graves and to pray to God in the merit of the person buried there, but not make sure you're not talking directly to the person. Okay, and having been to some of these sites and observing the way people act at these sites, I have to tell you that it's not clear to me what's going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of what I see at these places are quite disturbing from that perspective. And therefore, I'd like to suggest the following. There are also other sources that talk about how, again, we're not supposed to talk to the dead people directly, but if we go to the kever and we pray to God, then the person who's buried there will see us praying and somehow will also. So someone who has a more mystical, Kabbalistic orientation might find it, you know, very important to be at the exact spot. But what I'm driving at here is that it's a very interesting historical and archaeological question where Kever Rachel is, but I'm not sure that it really matters. Meaning, if you go to Kever Rachel, what's known as Kever Rachel today, right? You'll see there a large site, which unfortunately today is more like a fortress because of, you know, what has to be done there. And you'll see people of all types, men and women, religious, not so religious, all sorts of people coming there to pray at what they believe is the grave of Rachel Imenu. If you go to Kubur Bani Israel, you'll see some rocks on the side of a road that archaeologists and people that are interested in will show you, and you'll see nothing. Nobody goes to pray there. And I don't know where Rachel is really buried, but if the point of praying at Kever Rachel is to pray to Hashem in the merit of Rachel Imenu, and we have a site that for whatever reason has become associated with Rachel, and maybe she's physically buried somewhere else, I don't know how much it really matters. One could visit one site, one could visit both sites, one could visit neither site. But one other point I will make, though, and that's the point that you mentioned before. You called me on it, because I said that there don't seem to be early sources that talk so much about praying at graves, and you're correct. I'm correct at saying that, but you're correct at pointing out that there are a few exceptions to that statement. And the most important one is the midrash that Rashi also quotes about Kalev ben Yefuneh, right? In Parshat Shlach, when it discusses the Miraglim, so it talks about how they entered Eretz Canaan from Sinai and they traveled through the whole thing. And it says there, Vaya'alu ba'negev vayavo'ad Chevron. They entered from the south and they came to Chevron, but the word came to Chevron is strangely in the singular, not in the plural. It says vayavo, not vayavo'u. And Rashi there quotes the Midrash Chazal that they didn't all go to Chevron. Only one of them went to Chevron, and that was Kalev ben Yefuneh, one of the two Meraglim who didn't go with the others and who gave the proper report. He went there, according to this Midrash, he went there to lihishtateach al kivrei avot, to literally lie himself down on the graves of his ancestors and to pray in their zechut for divine assistance, that he should be saved from the evil plan of the other Meraglim. And that's one of the main sources that those quoters say, look, there is an early source for it. And indeed, there's no question about that. So it could be that that proves that, in fact, there is an ancient minhag to pray at graves. Or it could be that that's the exception that proves the rule. And it could be that that's why, it could be that Kever, that the Marat Machpelah, and maybe also Kever Rachel, and maybe also Kever Yosef, the ones that are mentioned in this week's Parsha, it could be that those were sites. Avraham bought Marat Machpelah, and he made it very clear that he wanted that to be, that he saw great significance in that place, and that he wanted that to be a place that Am Yisrael was connected to. And we see in this week's parasha how important it was to Yaakov to be buried dafka there. It could be that Marat Machpelah, and maybe also Kever Rachel, where we also have these ancient traditions, are significant sites, and that doesn't necessarily mean that every grave is significant. And maybe the fact that we know where these ones are, with a high degree of certainty, or Kever Rachel, we have at least two options that both seem like they could be right. And so many of these other graves, we have no idea where they are. Maybe that says something as well. But the one point with this, I'll close, is that is the point of the Be'er Heitev. Praying at graves may have value, but only if one makes sure that one's directing one's tefillot only to Hashem and not directly to the person who's buried there, because that certainly gets too close to Doreish Alamitiv.